This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here, when the people speak, they make a difference. We've got a couple of great lineup this evening and some fascinating guests with us right now. Dar and Dale Emmy, the founders of a wonderful group called the Yellow Ribbon Suicide Prevention Program. Is an international program. They started in 1994 when they lost their youngest son, Michael, age 17, to suicide. And since then, they have committed their lives and their work to the prevention of other such tragic cases. Hello, Dar and Dale. Dale, how are you?
We're fine today. How are you? This is Dar. I have a little bit of a springtime in the Rocky allergies.
Well, I have a Michigan allergy combination, so I'm with you, hon. how terrible for you to constantly be asked to relive those days and those moments and your explanations on tour. Although your work is beyond reproach and so vital, and as a matter of fact, I want to thank Dale. We recently, a dear friend of ours and her family has been suffering with the situation and a potential suicide and depression, and Dale was kind enough to speak to my friend today, and I just want to acknowledge that. I want you to know how important and how valuable that was. And you know what was so valuable, Dale, is the fact that we were able, because of just, you know, my work on understanding what you and Dar do, I was able to offer my friend something. Hopelessness is such a deeply rooted part of this, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
You're absolutely right. Hopelessness is really the pit, and that's my choice of words. It's not, you know, an expert word, but hopelessness is an expert word. And you reach that point where you just feel like you're in such a pit and you can't find your way out. And our professional people, the mental health and the hospitals and our therapists and counselors, they do such an exemplary job. And we're becoming more and more aware as a community and as a people that suicide really isn't just in our heads that we're crazy or being stupid or being cowards or anything like that. It's really more about some physiological things that go on in our body and with our lives and with the brain chemicals in our life and the extreme stress. And so as I mentioned, all the professionals that we have is such an exemplary job, yet there's just so much work to do. And in engaging friends, engaging families, engaging communities is where we really find that we're filling that gap. That's what Yellow Ribbon does the best, is fill the gap of being there as a friend, being there as a support between those people who need the help and those people who get the help or can give the help, and the caretakers or the parents, the loved ones of, just example, like your friend who's worried about her loved one going through this, whatever it's called, whether it's called depression, suicidalization. I mean, there's a lot of different words appropriate at any given time. But what's working, what I can tell you is what's working, and the national strategy for suicide prevention for the U.S. is that we're engaging everybody in the community, and that's when we're beginning to see the tide change.
Well, Dar and Dale, I think one of the things that you said is that you're filling the gap, and that is huge, because even in the short time that we've been dealing with this over the last couple of weeks, and I up until this time had never experienced something like this up close and personal, we found so many gaps in the system. I mean, people that in the system and being sought, having help, the help really isn't much help. I mean, they allow people to let themselves out. They give them medication as if it was some kind of a Band-Aid that they were putting on a person, and then they send them back out into society in what we feel was a crisis situation. And you know, and I think just talking to somebody, talking to groups like you, it helps the parents feel that they have some kind of tools, some kind of empowerment in dealing with the gaps that our society leaves in the care of people who are chronically depressed, the care of people who are suicidal or we fear are suicidal. And again, I appreciate your talk. Now, let me ask you, Dale, when we spoke earlier in the day, one of the things that you said is that you were training parents on what to say and how to help their children during these things. Now, who knows what really is helpful, but what sort of things would a parent say to someone? Or how would you identify that someone is suicidal?
Well, it's a whole bunch of things all at once, so bear with me here for a second. One of the things that we teach the parents is, first of all, this is a subject that we need to approach just like we do all the other things that we, as good parents around the country, teach our kids since they're little. We teach them to look both ways before they cross the street. We know the tragedy of getting hit by a car, but we know that if we teach them something ahead of time, they'll never be in that situation. We teach them about, you know, something is hot. You don't touch the stove or a fire or other things like that. So what we're doing is we teach parents what to look for if their children suddenly start acting differently. And that is the number one thing. If a child starts acting different than they normally do, then it's time to look at what's happening. It's time to say, okay, approach them and say, what's going on? Is there something I can help you with? And, you know, those are some of the first off warning signs that are happening with the child. Many times people look at what is considered to be a list of warning signs for suicide ideation or suicide attempting, and it's almost the exact same list of a child who's becoming a teenager, who's growing up, you know, changes in sleep, changes in mood, you know, all those types of things. But what's important to look for, number one, is a change in that particular child's behavior. Like if somebody's always on time to school and always doing their reports and always getting along with people, and suddenly they're not getting along with anybody, or they're giving things away, or they're, you know, sleeping for no apparent reason, all that type of thing. Those are things to say, okay, what's going on? And the bottom line that we always tell parents is don't try to do this by yourself. If you're worried about your son or your daughter, or you think there's something there, approach them, but have a friend available ready that you can call in case they happen to say yes, they are. The one thing that we always approach with parents too is that don't wait for something to go on. Approach them and say, have any of your friends ever thought of suicide? Have you ever heard, like with our program, we always say, tell people, have you ever heard of Yellow Ribbon, suicide prevention? Have you ever heard of our cards? And then let the kids answer. Let them give some kind of a response. And then follow it from there, just like we do with all the other issues with kids.
You know, it seems to be so much. Go ahead, Dar.
Well, I was just going to say, you're talking earlier about the gaps in our, I'm going to call it system, and I mean that respectfully, but I hear clearly what you're saying about the gaps in the system. And in talking about those gaps, that's where the parent and community members become so powerful and so very important. And what we have found over the years is that parents, a lot of times people think parents are in denial, oh, it won't happen to me. But I think it's a lot of times even deeper than that. Whether you want to call it just good old-fashioned superstition, I'm afraid if I talk about it, it's going to happen. But yet, studies show that by talking to our kids, that we do make a difference, that they're used to us giving them life skills. They're used to us telling them how to handle situations, that, you know, they're used to us showing them that there are situations in life and here's how you deal with it. So they are actually responding pretty well to the parents having that talk with them. But it also gives the parents some tools, because I tell you, after we lost Mike, somebody gave me one of the best pieces of advice the night that he died. A detective said, remember, you're going to be dealing with two things here. And we went, what? And, of course, looking back, we were in such shock. But he said, you know, you're going to be dealing with the grief of the loss of your child, but you're going to be dealing with the guilt. And I can tell you that having lost other people in our lives, we had been bereaved before and were able to get through it. But the guilt, that's the thing that can blindside you, because the woulda, coulda, shouldas. And so one of the things that we have found is that parents talking to kids do help empower both the parents and the teens. But interestingly, when the parents are at that place where they're too frightened or, quite frankly, have their head stuck in the sand, that they don't want to talk about it, when we engage the young people of a community and they then draw their parents into the conversation, we are able to make that communication. So the gap that I'm talking about that we fill in the community is that gap, again, between those who need help and those professionals who can provide help. You so eloquently described it earlier about some of those gaps. And so it falls to us as a community to help each other. And one of our strongest allies with suicide prevention in any community is our faith-based group, whatever that may be, and just our community members. Mm-hmm. We can't do this. I mean, we're taught CPR. We're taught, you know, how to be volunteer firemen. I mean, in the past few years, look how much our citizens have had to step up under terrible conditions, whether it's natural disasters or man-made disasters. And as a community, we reach out and help each other. This is one of the leading killers of kids in the United States today. Over 1 million people worldwide every year die by suicide. And if we as communities can reach, you know, can be a part of that solution, we can really make a difference. And that's what we do as Yellow Ribbon. We're community-based.
It must have been very hard for you. It must be very hard every time you hear about another suicide. We have recently had in the Hollywood community a tragic suicide of the Marie Osmond's son. And somehow that just reminds people, it brings it back to light. I think people that have not been exposed to any kind of situation like that just kind of go on with their lives as if it doesn't exist. But then you hear about somebody famous killing themselves, and suddenly it becomes in your face again.
Like it really can't happen to you. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I mean, Marie is so well thought of. To have that happen to her family really shows that it really can happen to any one of us, that when the heart breaks, when the pain becomes so overwhelming that we can't carry that pain by ourselves. And that's really what that hopelessness, and that's really what suicide is all about, is not being able to live with that pain. Somebody taught me, one of the professionals early on taught me, that anytime somebody came to me and said, I just don't want to live, they're actually giving me an incomplete statement. That if they could say the whole statement, they would say, I just don't want to live, or I just don't know how to live like this. In other words, in this pain, with this hopelessness. and we just can't carry that pain by ourselves. And that's where all of us being a part of the solution, we can help carry that pain. Isn't there some old phrase about sharing the load with a friend lightens it?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that, you know, the other thing that I found, again, having this come up in our lives has been, you know, very fortuitous. I mean, you know, you being on the show and just dealing with this has put a completely different perspective on it for me. And one of the things that I find is that I really think people are very disconnected from suicide. I don't think people understand. And I think that, I most certainly agree with you that as parents, that as a society, that as groups of people, whether it's our churches and clergy or whatever, that we need to step up to the plate and understand that if we don't accept that these things are real, how can we pass on the reality of them and the reality of their consequences to our children?
We lead by
it's
example.
Huge.
You're absolutely right. We lead by example. Our children learn from us. And if they see us addressing this issue, it's going to be better for them to be able to address it. See, they're already faced with it. And what we found after Mike died, it was the teens of this community that started this program. And it's been teens still yet today who carry this program forward because they're dealing with it every single day. But nobody, mm-hmm. by and large, has given them, what do we do if we're faced with this? And again, that's what Yellow Ribbon does, is give them very effective, safe tools. But
mm-hmm.
it's adults who have, we've missed getting the training about what do we do if this situation comes up, but our kids are faced with it every day.
When we first got started, there was a lot of people who said we can't burden the kids with this kind of an issue. But like Dar said, the kids are already talking about it on, especially nowadays, on social networks, but even back on cell phones and even before we had the cell phones, kids were calling each other at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and said, you know, what's going on in their life, or so-and-so just broke up with me, or I don't know what to do with the rest of my life. And who was on the other end of the line but their friend? Their friend who kept talking to them and kept telling them how they were valuable and they were needed. And that's what we need to have happen from, you know, from all ages and all groups. Our key phrase with our trademark phrase, if you will, is to tell the kids that it's okay to ask for help. But then we follow it up by saying, who do they get that help from? From their teachers and their parents and their counselors and the local, whoever, the local agencies, and coordinate the parents. And then we tell all the other people, whoever else it is, to be a link for that person. We don't ever ask anybody to be a counselor. We always ask them to be the link to that person's next level of help, whatever it might be. Sometimes it might be the buffer that they need to help get them to their parents, or to get them to a counselor, or to get them to the member of their faith community that they trust. Sometimes it means to get them into a mental health situation of some kind. And, you know, the bottom line is that we always need to make sure that we're all there for each other. Our society has always been built on helping one another. And this is just another one of those things where we're doing it. We meet so many people. I remember, now I can tell you, a dozen different ministers and clergy members and a rabbi that, you know, each one of them in their own way said the exact same thing at some different time, that they say, I know what to say about from my theological studies, but how do I go talk to the family? How do I go talk to that child or that parent? And that's what we do, is we try to help people see that, first of all, we're all human and that we all have an ability to listen. And many times people simply need to be able to have somebody else that they can talk to about what's going on in their life. And if it becomes, let's say, like, for example, when we talk to teachers in schools, we do a training in schools for staff and teachers prior to us ever talking to the student body. And mm-hmm. we always tell the teachers, go home today and talk to your own students, your own kids. And we tell them, have a friend ready. If you need it to be on speed dial or whatever, that's fine. But to be ready and to go home and just say, have you ever know anybody that's thought of suicide? And then say, mm-hmm. after the answer, you say, have you ever thought of suicide? And wait and let them give you an answer. And it's unbelievable how many people have considered it. And if we can get it at that level, what we've done is we've opened the door. Parents out there that are listening right now, if they're not too scared, could go home and say that exact same thing to their kid. And if they're not afraid of it, they could just say, okay, the bottom line is if their child says no, they're relieved. But they have a plan and they've opened the door. But if their child happens to say, like one young student in California did, he says, yeah, Mom, I don't know that I'll make it to graduation. I think about it every single day.
Let me ask you, Dale. First of all, the meaning of the yellow ribbon itself is quite significant for you and your family. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yes, we can. It started the very first day after Mike died. Mike drove, and he and I used to work on classic Ford Mustangs. Mike drove a yellow 68 Mustang that was his cherished thing he was getting ready to take to the drags. He was always helping people with it, running people here and there. Somebody needed to go somewhere, get somewhere. He was always the one that jumped in and took them places. So he was well known for what he did in that car to help people. So when he died, people started showing up at our house with yellow ribbons, yellow roses, yellow carnations, yellow everything, pinned to their shirts and in their pockets and pinned to their hats. And that yellow ended up becoming a ribbon pinned to a card because girls started saying, will you tell my friends what you told me yesterday, that it's okay to ask for help? And from there, ribbons got pinned to cards. Cards began to be being sent. Friends in Colorado sent them to friends in New Jersey and Wyoming and Arizona. And it was like a snowball that you just couldn't quit running all over the place.
And how large is the organization today?
Well, we have chapters and program sites, volunteer chapters and volunteer program sites in every single state in the country. We have numerous program sites in many of the states. We have different levels of program sites or chapters in 47 countries. And 99% of it is all volunteer people, parents, pediatricians, clinicians, all the combination thereof who are working in their own community to bring together resources in a unified way to make sure that kids will be safe.
I know that a lot of the organizations have suicide prevention lines. Do you find that those are of value to these children if they are in such a crisis?
Yes. The answer is yes and no. Some of them, that's true. We're very fortunate in this country to have a national hotline, 1-800-273-TALK. Excuse me, everybody. It's Rocky Mountain Allergies. We're very fortunate to have those lines, and in a lot of places they do work. But what we're finding is that we have to expand on that because we've got to look to social networking. We've got to look at all of the social networking sites. We're really moving beyond. We're seeing that while the kids are using their cell phones, what they're using them the most for is texting. So there are some plans in place to build in some support networks for those kids who are on texting. So the hotlines are one of the answers, but they aren't the only answer. The other piece to that I would like to share with you is that we've also had feedback from young people in different local communities that won't call a local line because of, if it's a very small community, they're afraid of gossip, or if any of our young people who are gender identity, sexual orientation, in that questioning stage or in that part of their life, they won't call a local line for fear of of all of the repercussions. So that's why having some of our national lines are so important to have as part of the support system. So yes and no. They work in different places.
That certainly is something I hadn't thought about either. Children that are going through identity crises and gender crises, preferring suicide rather than outing themselves. It's so sad that in 2010 we still have to deal with such a ridiculous reason to allow our children to die.
I totally, totally agree. Totally.
Yeah, we need to be protected.
I'm sorry. Go right ahead, Dale.
You said we need to be protecting our children, giving them tools, giving them support, letting them know that whatever issue that they're dealing with, there's someone somewhere out there that's going to help them. And we all need to be that doorway, that link, to be able to get them to that help. If we can't help them get to the person that can. So.
And may I also ask you, Dale and Dar, as you also, the parents and the family and friends also become victims of the suicide, how do you help survivors cope?
Well, we actually talk to a lot of survivors. There are times that we do it every single day, sharing experiences. One of the things for us after Mike died was that we... of course, had our therapy and our faith and our family, but we also we were blessed to be able to attend a support group. And what we got from that was just seeing others who are going through the same thing or have gone through, in other words, they're a little bit further down the line of recovery, or maybe that's not the best word, but on this path of trying to put your life back together. And it just kind of helps show us the way. And so that's what we try to share with other people. We're not professional counselors, but we share. And what we find we do so much of is listen. Because parents and as loved ones, not just parents, but brothers and sisters and children, but as survivors of suicide loss, so many times nobody wants to hear. Nobody wants to talk about it. And just like with any other trauma, you know how it is, how you have to kind of retell the story several times till it just finally eases inside of you? Oh, so-and-so was in a car wreck, or oh, so there was this plane crash, or you know how we need to talk about it over and over? Well, it's the same way when you have a suicide loss. And so many times they don't have a place just to talk. And so what we do a lot of is listen, just listen. But they understand that we can... understand. It's never going to be the same for any single person, but we understand in a comparable way that awful wrenching loss of losing somebody to suicide and that double-edged sword of having that guilt that goes along with it. Then we also, of course, refer them. There's a lot of very wonderful support groups, and we do a lot of referral. One of the things that Yellow Ribbon, one of our strengths is, and people know us by, is our willingness to network and our willingness to help people find somebody who will help, whether it's a support group or try to fill that other gap, you know, reaching the professionals. We do a lot of training and a lot of presentations.
I know that you have a program that's called the Best Practices Registry. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the Best Practices Registry is a federal list of programs that are evaluated, it's, you know, checked out and made sure that they're safe to be presented to kids in schools or whatever group that they're designated for. And our programs that we have for training youth and our program that we have for training our curriculum for youth and our curriculum for adults has been approved and listed on the Best Practices Registry for safe and acceptable. It's a federal registry that takes programs and says these are good or not. And it took for many years we worked on getting this right and exact so that we would be teaching what is safe and empowering to the kids, but also to the staff and people in schools.
When Now, in light of the economic downturn, excuse me, my turn, that we've had in the country. Yeah, I know. In light of the downturn here in the United States economically, how has that affected the funding that goes into a lot of these programs?
Hugely. Hugely. It has cut funding dramatically, especially for the grassroots community groups. For us, for example, we're operating on a third from this. Our office is just a small office, small staff, mostly volunteers, two paid staff, but we work on a third of what we a third of a budget of what we used to. So the downturn really, really hit grassroots and suicide prevention groups pretty hard. And yet, we're serving more people and doing more work than we did in the previous years. And that's a pretty common theme across most of the suicide prevention organizations in the United States. We're doing more with less.
I guess in the pinch, we always do come through, especially when it comes to our children. And I'm so glad that you do. We have a question from Matt in Wisconsin for either Gail or Darth, whoever would like to take this. And you did, and we did touch on this a little bit. Matt in Wisconsin asked, my question is, how do you overcome the stigma that talking about suicide will cause someone to commit suicide? It's almost like ringing a bell. Hey, you know, if you just in case you weren't thinking about it, I know you've been really depressed. A lot of people are terrified that if they bring this up to them, to a child that's depressed or a young person that's depressed already, that they may, you know, had they not thought about it, perhaps they would start thinking in that direction. How do you overcome that? And do you find that talking about it far outweighs the not talking about it?
Absolutely. I'll start with your last comment first. Talking about it absolutely outweighs the not talking about it. The experts and the research shows that talking about suicide in an appropriate way actually saves lives rather than causes more suicide. And how do you overcome it? You just keep talking about it. And what I'm talking about now is for us as groups and us as individuals to talk about. We need to find a solution for this situation in our community. We need to have education. We need to have public awareness campaigns. That's what you, is this Matt in Wisconsin, that's what he can do is keep the voice going, keep talking about it. We're very lucky in that most of the young people in different communities do keep talking about it, and they keep pestering people saying, teach me, help me, show me what I can do to help my friends. And slowly but surely, it's like a drop of water on the desert. Sometimes it just seems to sink in and you don't even think it's been there. But it's just like all of these other issues in our society that we've had to deal with. We just have to keep at it.
And a couple may other things. I ask? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jill.
I'm just going to add a couple of things. There are some major national research studies that have concluded that talking about suicide does not cause it to happen. It will actually open the door to the isolation that people feel when they're thinking about it.
Very interesting. That's really, I think, a very valuable thing to understand for our listeners. I'd also like to touch on something, a phenomena that's recently become very apparent, and I'm sure that you on some level at least have read about it, but I don't know if you have any programs that are helping the military and the veterans. Our suicide rate in the military has, for the first time in history, has been the highest ever, and war veterans are also committing suicide in record numbers that they've never seen before. Can you help explain why that phenomena, and is anything being done either by Yellow Ribbon or other national organizations or international organizations to help these young men and women?
Well, as far as why is it happening in more record numbers, there's a lot of different schools of thought on it, but one of it is that there's better reporting and that we're finding out that just through sheer reporting we're seeing that there's higher numbers. But again, it speaks to just the stress and the amount of pain and hopelessness that has built up in our world. As far as what's being done, there's a lot that is being done by both our federal government and a lot of our local governments. The federal government has a huge campaign that is focused for the veterans, for active military, and for the veterans and for their families. For Yellow Ribbon's part, what we find ourselves doing is doing a lot more with the families, i.e., the kids in the schools. A lot of times, the parents who are worried about their kids. Teaching communities how to do good, solid, safe suicide prevention. One of our skills, one of our expertises is being able to work in small communities. We find so many small communities that don't have any resources or access to resource. Hospital may be 45 miles away. They may not have even an ambulance service. And we hear often, how can I help? And I'm still on track with your question about the veterans. With the military, oftentimes in these small communities, we find people saying, we don't have any resources. And what we do is we work with them and help them identify who actually is in their community who can do this gap step that we teach, this be a link step that can help that person get from that point of need to the point of help. So that includes the veterans. So let's say we're talking about in a very small community, and somebody who has served our country that just is really reaching that meltdown point, but they're in a small community and people think there aren't resources. There really are. It really comes down to identifying. So back to the bigger question, is there a lot being done? Yes. By the federal government, we're identifying a lot of the resources, implementing a lot of resources through the VA hospitals, and I know there's a lot of controversy about that. But the National Lifeline I talked about, the 1-800-273-TALK, has a whole section for the military, both veterans and active military. And for us personally, it's a very set.
Go right ahead.
Well, I think we have a delay, and I apologize. For us personally, for Dale and I, helping serve our vets and our active military is important because we have both directly in our family as we speak.
There's a question, but I think this next text message that came through from Erica in Washington is really, really very important. I want to make sure I get this in. And I apologize because I should be announcing this the website all the time, www.yellowribbon.com, is the website for the, or is it? Okay, we have it's .com here. Okay, I apologize. That is yellowribbon.org. That is a hugely valuable site. I have sent my own friend to that site within the last few days. And Erica wants to know, is there a phone number to call to speak with Yellow Ribbon counselors, and is it a 24-hour hotline in the USA?
Okay, the hotline does not belong to Yellow Ribbon. We are more education and public awareness. The hotline is a federally funded hotline, and yes, that number is 1-800-273-TALK. And like I say, it's federally funded, and it's a nationwide system. So to answer your question directly, yes, there is that number. Just know that it's not directly a Yellow Ribbon number.
Okay, and could you repeat that number again?
1-800-273-TALK. It's 1-800. Now I have to look at the keys again.
273-TALK.
Yeah.
And it's an 800 number, folks, so for anybody that, I think that's a number that should, be in every parent's home, on every parent's refrigerator.
I agree. It's a, when it comes
and within to, all the school systems and available to children throughout, like the hallways, it is a very serious situation, and I think that we need to start taking it more seriously as parents, educators.
I agree.
We also have another question here from, well, you know, before that, I have something that I want to ask you, and it's near and dear to my heart. Many years ago, my cousin's son, who was in a car accident and was paraplegic, but became paraplegic when he was, I think, 21 years old. I think he was either 20 or 21. And he underwent tremendous suffering over the fact that he could no longer walk. He never really did reconcile with it. And he died. But we never knew, no one ever knew, if it was an intentional overdose, an act of suicide, or if this was an accidental suicide. Do you believe that we probably have more suicides that just are not thought of as suicides?
Absolutely. And the experts believe that's true, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the federal statistics that we can't, I can't really name the source, but I'll tell you that there was one very highly placed source that told us one time that the rate of suicide, the number of suicides is probably double what it is published nationally. And that if it was ever to be published nationally, the reason it wasn't at that time was because our society wasn't ready to accept the epidemic.
Well, and there is so many, there are so many more suicides than what are identified as suicide because of how it's coded in on death certificates, etc. But I'm so sorry to hear about your cousin. And that happened.
I didn't know her son very well. I was very close to her, but I really didn't. They lived out in California for most of their lives, and the boys were troubled, to say the least. So we were always concerned about them. But when it happened, it was, you know, nobody ever knew. That was the whole key. Nobody ever knew if it was a suicide or if it was just an accidental overdose because he couldn't bear. He was always on heavy doses of drugs and kept complaining of severe pain. And, you know, who's to argue with the pain level of another individual? I mean, how can you really even know these things? But, in fact, he did end up probably about 5 years after the accident dying. And I don't know if it was a blessing or if it was a curse, Darrendale. Because obviously, no matter what, she lost her son, and it was something that broke her heart throughout her whole life. And she recently passed, and she was very happy to go to be with her children. And it was just to this day, it never left our minds. It still haunts our family, wondering.
And they do even. You know, people who die by suicide, clearly when it is a suicide, but yet you don't know why. We know that the core issue is that they couldn't carry the pain, whatever that pain identified. It's like I tell kids in school, pain has a lot of names. It could be called trauma, bipolar, schizophrenia, heartbreak, heartache. The list goes on. But for whatever reason, that person just couldn't carry the pain by themselves. And I'm sorry to hear that for your family.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm sorry that it happened to anybody's family, and I, too, wish you and your family well. Samantha in Chicago has a question. Well, she says, do you believe the prescriptions of the parents are affecting the birth and that they are born with drug dependencies just as a drug addict is born, and the fact that they are not taking these meds can somehow relate to suicidal tendencies? And her second part of the question is, do you accept volunteers for the helpline? I was a Red Cross trained suicide hotline and rape response volunteer. And Samantha, I will respond a little bit to that. The Yellow Ribbon Society is more about education and advocacy within the community. They don't actually run a hotline, so that, but I don't, maybe they know a little bit more about the actual hotline itself. Go ahead, Dar, Dale, whoever would like to take this one on.
It's still Dar. I think I'm the chatterbox today. Yes, actually the hotline, because it is a group of certified hotlines throughout the United States. So there's a hotline near her, and they always need volunteers to become trained and serve on that hotline. They would so welcome her to become a volunteer. And if she'll call that 1-800-273-TALK, which is 1-800-273-8255, and push the button that talks about volunteers, they would be so appreciative, very much so. And as far as the prescription drugs and how it's impacting, I can't really give you any kind of an expert answer. I can tell you that it has been a lot of discussion in many of the conferences that we've been at in the past several years. Is that one of the impacts that we're seeing? But I can't really answer a solid answer about it.
It's a debate that could go on.
We may never know the truth of that.
Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. The biggest thing to know that if somebody is being prescribed some kind of medication, the important thing out there is to take the medication the way the medical professional is recommending it, but to stay back in constant contact with that medical professional if there's any changes in that individual.
And, you know, talking about volunteers, I'd like to say that all of our Yellow Ribbon program sites and chapters, our office included, we always welcome volunteers. The 99% of our organization is made up by volunteers, so while we don't do hotlines, we're always in need of people becoming trained to be presenters, to become trainers, to help us with the different projects that we've got, and we're launching a new project this year actually using Mike's car as a quote-unquote vehicle. It's called Restore Hope Across America, and we're restoring Mike's car as a symbol of how we can restore hope in each one of us, and our goal is to be able to take that car across America to the different states and to the different sites and have different events and allow people to come up and share their messages of hope, leaving messages for us in the car, and ultimately we're going to write a book about the messages of hope from people throughout this country.
Well, I certainly hope you guys make it our Michigan way. I would love to host you. We know a lot of people in the area that would jump at the opportunity to help such a worthy cause, Darren.
Well, we would so appreciate it. We need everything from people to money, but if we can bring this car to your community and what it symbolizes, that it's about that we can recover from the stuff that we've all been going through, and we can restore health, and we can help let our messages from each other help each other. So please let us know. Come to our website. Use our phones. Email us. Get on our Facebook. We have Facebook. And you can get on all of those different contacts through you folks, the People Speak Radio. Let's put this together, and let's really help restore hope.
Well, I appreciate your being with us this evening, both Dar and Dale. That's the yellowribbon.org. Please go look it up. If you have children, be a big enough parent to be an adult and be able to present them with the information that your children need in order to survive youth, in order to survive the onslaught of life or anything else that happens. And that is just such a beautiful cause, helping to restore America and our youth. Congratulations, good work, and may his soul rest in peace. And you guys are doing some really great work. We appreciate your being with us this evening. Thank you very much. And we apologize to Mo Rock. Mo Rock, we'll get you one day. Somehow we keep missing the opportunity to have an incredible talent on. But thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us at the People Speak Radio. Have a great night, everyone. Thank you, Darndale.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land.